But first up this hour, to a country that's delighted us in so many ways, Italy, that's given us a disproportionate number of artistic and cultural gifts. Just a couple of weeks ago, I referred to the country's gobsmacking art on display in that Kevin MacLeod television series on the European Grand Tour. And indeed, just last week came some tourism report saying that 60% of Australians would pick Italy as the place they'd most like to visit. But on the ground, something seems amiss. As well as rapturous travel accounts of people discovering suburban church frescoes, there are searing verdicts like these, which I'll read to you now, both from people of Italian background. Here's writer Piero Ostellino from his recent book, The Scoundrel State. A country paralysed by a huge number of laws and regulations, suffocated by an invasive and slow-witted bureaucratic culture, a country in a relentless cultural, economic, political decline. This is Italy today. And from Sylvia Greco, a Sydney-based freelance journalist, after visiting her homeland, writing in the Financial Review, undoubtedly Berlusconi used his television channels to bewilder the country, crushing opposition voices and creating a grotesquely vulgar society full of naked girls and arrogant politicians. So is Italy drifting? And if so, when did this drift begin? Well, joining me to discuss Berlusconi's Italy is Guy Dinmore. He's the Rome correspondent for the Financial Times. And Professor Anna Cento-Bull. She's Professor of Italian History and Politics at Bath University's Department of European Studies, highly respected in Britain for her analysis of Italian politics. And in our South Bank studio, our very own Radio National producer James Panichi, who's Australian correspondent for a number of Italian newspapers and magazines. Welcome to you all.
Hi.
Anna, would you agree in any way with, say, Sylvia Greco and Piero Ostellino that Italy is in relentless cultural, political and economic decline?
I would certainly agree that Italy is in some kind of economic decline, first of all. And this is especially in contrast to how the country was seen in the 1980s, especially when it was, its economic system was hailed as one of the responses to the decline in manufacturing in Western societies, whereas Italy seemed, with its small family firms, with its industrial districts, with its innovative manufacturing sectors, seem to be doing extremely well and thriving. It was taken as a model of development. And then in the 1990s, this economic model found itself in difficulty, mainly because of international competition, because of globalization. And despite the fact that actually it's still doing relatively well, now it lacks exactly, and it is more in need, let's say, of government intervention, of long-term policies, which the political system doesn't seem to be able to provide. And this is the kind of economic model that also produced a protest party like the Northern League in the early 1990s.
Let me ask, can I just ask Guy Dinmore, because I just want to get responses from all three of you before we drill down a bit further. How do you see it, Guy?
Well, certainly there's a lot of agonising going on in Italy ever since I've been here for the last 3 years, exactly on this question, is Italy in decline? And if you talk to a lot of young people who are desperate to find jobs, who can't afford to leave their homes because life is so expensive, wages are so low. Lots of young people are leaving the country to find work, especially to Spain, until the Spanish bubble burst. Yes, there's definitely a feeling of crisis here that's exacerbated by the sense that this is a political system that is mired in corruption, one scandal after the other, and that Italy has, in fact, lost its way recently.
And James Panichi, looking on as you do, sitting in both cultures, Australia and Italy?
I think there's something strange happening in Italy at the moment, and that is a perception, particularly young people, and I get to speak to a lot of young Italians. They all seem to think that things are terrible in Italy at the moment, that the economy offers them few prospects, that the baby boomers are still running the country and that there's no place for them. And that may well be the case. I think, though, that things have changed in recent years in Italy. There is perhaps a greater expectation on the part of young Italians in particular that, you know, there is an expectation that they should be able to succeed, whereas perhaps their parents were not that ambitious. So things are changing. Italian society hasn't changed fast enough, but I think it also comes down to perceptions. I think Italians feel that they are a lot worse off than they actually are.
You write, Anna Centobull, about a culture of fear in Italy during the last few years that actually won the election for Berlusconi in 2008 because, in a way, that election interpreted all the fears that Italians hold. What are they?
It is especially a fear of personal security and linked to a perception of growing crime. This is a perception, it's not necessarily upheld by statistics, by the facts.
Well, in fact, the statistics have stayed relatively stable, haven't they, for about the last 10 years?
Exactly. But we know that perceptions, can be extremely important and they don't necessarily have to coincide with facts. And so, and this perception of rising crime is linked to fear of immigration, of being swamped by mass immigration, and immigrants are often equated with crime, with being criminals. And this is exacerbated, of course, by certain populist political parties, which fuel this kind of perceptions, and also by the media. In addition, there are fears of linked to economic decline, and this has become the biggest fear following, of course, the financial crisis. And yes, I think the right in general, the right parties, Berlusconi, but also the Northern League, have been much better able to intercept these fears and to promote themselves as having the solutions, which are seen as, being tough on crime, tough on law and order, tough on immigration, and this seems to have, the electorate appears to have responded positively to this kind of political offer.
Yes, James Benicchi, I visited some friends last year in Italy, and I was struck by comparison with Australia, a much more monocultural country, and notwithstanding the immigrants who are there. And, of course, there's just no real experience of mass migration in Italy, is there? Does that strike you too in this question of fear?
Well, I think that's the most shameful aspect of Italian society today. A country which has had such a huge experience with emigration, as in people leaving the country, has no interest in pursuing ideas of immigration and multiculturalism. And when I say that, Italy has no immigration policy. There are no numbers. There is no public servant who is responsible for immigration in Italy. What happens is immigrants arrive in the country and after a while they end up, after working illegally for 5 or 6 years and being exploited for 5 or 6 years, find a way to gain permanent residency. But there is no immigration program as you and I as Australians would understand it. And that's astounding because there are places in the northeast, particularly of Italy, where there are small industries, but they're very hungry for labour. And they're desperate for immigration, but, properly structured immigration. They want people in the country. But then you have this bizarre political debate in which the right of politics in Italy is dead against immigration on all fronts. And then the left of politics is in favour of immigration no matter what, in spite of the fact that people have been exploited as illegal immigrants. So the debate has been politicised. Mm. Neither side of the debate actually understand what they're talking about. If you mention to an Italian, il problema dell'immigrazione, the problem of immigration, they answer you in a way that shows that they don't understand the difference between legal and illegal immigration. It's a total debacle, the way immigration has been run in Italy, and part of the reason why the Northern League and other xenophobic movements in Italy have been relatively successful is because their they're taking advantage of this policy void.
Well, in fact, I gather that Berlusconi has actually said out loud, after a particularly nasty death from which a Romanian gypsy was found guilty of robbing a woman and trying to rape her, and so it was a dreadful business, and it stirred up an enormous amount of discussion. But Berlusconi said that Italy ought never be allowed to become a multi-ethnic society. Now, I'm wondering, Guy Dinmore, whether there is something about the strong culture of Italy which is at particular risk if you try to stretch it too far to really make it much more like a globalised society that we're accustomed to elsewhere around the world. I mean, what's your impression, having lived there now for 3 years?
Well, to be fair to the Italians, I should point out that the waves of illegal and legal immigration in the last few years have been enormous and uncontrolled. I went to a town in Tuscany a few weeks ago where there are about 50,000 Chinese living there, most of them illegal. It's the biggest concentration of Chinese industry in Europe. Most of these factories are illegal. These Chinese used to arrive after harrowing journeys illegally across mountains, on trains, in shipping containers, etc. Now they simply catch a plane on a tourist visa to Frankfurt Airport and come by bus.
Mm.
With the opening of Europe's borders with the Schengen Agreement, thousands, tens of thousands of Romanians and Bulgarians have entered Italy looking for work. So I think to some extent Italy has been a victim of sort of open-door global policy, this globalization that has taken society by storm and really shaken it. And Europe as a whole does not have an answer to this. And it's not. I think actually Italians are extraordinarily tolerant towards the wave of immigrants. And it's correct to say that society here, which is aging and has a very low birth rate, does need foreign labor. But this completely out-of-control immigration policy is something that is having a huge stress here. The other thing, this myth about Italian culture and the sort of united country, it's just that. It is something of a myth. Italy has only been a country for 150 years.
Mm.
The people in the south, if they speak their dialect, cannot understand the people of the north. It's a very, very fragmented country. It doesn't easily withstand these social strains.
Yes, that is a very...
Could I say something else about immigration and politics?
Yes, do. Go ahead.
Apart from the vast presence of irregular immigrants, I mean, the vast majority of immigrants are regular, and a great number of them are employed regularly in small and medium-sized firms, especially in the northeast. But that is precisely the area which supports most strongly the Northern League. And the Northern League in recent years, and especially in the political elections of 2008, has been maintaining very strongly that Italy does not need immigration, that their line is very clear. So the point I'm trying to make here is not that Italian society is not tolerant, to a large extent it's very tolerant, but that Italian society has been told by politicians, by the political parties, untruths. That is to say, instead of being told immigrants are here to stay, Italy is faced with permanent immigration, and we need to find a successful model of integration.
Yes.
Italians are being told what presumably they also want to hear, which is that immigration is not needed and that is going to turn out to be a temporary phenomenon.
We're discussing Berlusconi's Italy with my guests Guy Dinmore from the Financial Times, Anna Centa Bull, Professor of Italian History and Politics at the University of Bath, and Radio National producer James Panichi. Well, let's just sort of bring this gradually to an end by talking about politics. It seems, again, looking on, that the political class isn't renewing itself with good talent, so that Sylvia Greco, whom I quoted earlier, the Australian-based journalist, said it's as if the entire middle class has genuinely turned off politics. Guy Dinmore, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's true that the system has become rather ossified. The new centre-left party is still basically dominated by the same politicians who came from the various roots in the 1980s and the 1990s, diverse strands of the Communist Party, the former Catholic parties. Berlusconi himself is 73 years old and you know, is the epitome of the sort of ageing authoritarian figure. And I think that is indeed a problem, that there is no sense of sort of renewal within these parties. But I think actually on the centre-right, Berlusconi's party is probably being more successful in bringing up a younger generation of more technocratic, sort of ambitious, entrepreneurial types of politicians who probably will become the next generation.
James Panicki?
Well, look, one good example of that is the leader of the main opposition party, the Democratic Party, someone called Pierluigi Bersani. And, I mean, he's the communist apparatchik from central casting. I mean, it's hard to describe how boring and how old-fashioned he is. He looks, he sounds. And he's up against, you know, I mean, mix, for local listeners, you know, mix Philip Ruddock with, you know, Penny Wong and Leonard Brezhnev. And that's Pierluigi Bersani. So that is a problem for the left of Italian politics, because they're up against someone like Silvio Berlusconi, who is a master communicator. And whether or not he's actually done it does certainly espouse the whole idea of cultural and political renewal. The fact that he himself represents old politics is another story. I think what's happened to Italy is interesting. After the corruption scandals of the early 1990s, all of the political system as it then was essentially collapsed. And for Australian listeners, that's like the Liberal Party, the Labor Party, the National Party, all collapsing overnight. And anyone who was involved with those parties, even at a very sort of a minor level, became in a way tainted by what had gone on. And so it's hard to reinvent a political class and a political, what in Italy they call a classe dirigente, a leadership class, overnight. It's something that takes time, and I think that slowly that's happening in Italy, but unfortunately Italian politics are still dominated by the old class, the old people.
And Anna Centobull, you're very interested, I suppose, in the nature of social change and how it is received in Italian society. How would you say that Italy's basic social structures, its families, its small firms that you referred to earlier, are they trying to move in lockstep with this gradual change of new political leadership that James has described, or not? Are they resisting it?
I think that they increasingly view politics with cynicism.
Yes.
So we go back to full circle, you know, after the high hopes of the early 1990s, the period when the first so-called First Republic collapsed, and there was an atmosphere of maybe total renewal. I would say we've gone back to a situation where the prevailing attitude is cynicism. But I would like to make perhaps a different point, which is that I think that the rules have to change if we want the political class to change. And I'll try and explain myself. If at the moment, in Italy, as in the past, the politicians appear to be mainly power brokers, networkers, people who need to be able to establish a system of patronage and clientelism. So those are the politicians that are needed, that political parties need, and not politicians who are decision makers, who can really devise new types of policies and implement them effectively. And the reason for this is partly that there is a lack of accountability, so that, you know, politicians continue to spend public resources without being made accountable if they waste those resources.
Let me
so if the rules change, then, you know, another political class will have to come forward.
Guy, Dinmore, your thoughts?
Well, there are regional elections in 10 days' time, and it'll be interesting to see whether Berlusconi's firm control on power will be eroded. I suspect it will be, but I also fear that actually the main beneficiaries of this election will be the xenophobic right-wing Northern League. I think once again the centre-left opposition will be shown wanting in new ideas. So I don't see any serious change on the political scene emerging soon.
Look, I wonder if there are some really serious concerns here about very unpleasant politics emerging. Like, for the first time since the Second World War, Rome is now run by a right-wing mayor, Gianni Alemanno, and he's not only right-wing, but he's a former neo-fascist street protester, and his supporters sometimes flash fascist salutes at his victory. I mean, this may be overstated, but James Panichi, is there any risk of some sort of fascist rebirth?
No, absolutely not. I mean, this is, in a way, when we see Italy from the outside, we have to realise that there is a lot of political posturing going on. And it's easy to refer to Berlusconi and Berlusconi's centre-right party as being a party of fascists. But, they're a million miles away. And I mean, the good thing about what's going on at the moment, actually, is that it's all happening in the open. I mean, all of these... or everything that's happening even in the last week about all of the talk about political corruption and things like that are in fact the kinds of things that were going on behind the scenes in the first so-called First Republic from World War II on. All of this would happen behind closed doors. At least what's going on at the moment is that we're seeing all of the ugliness of Italian politics, but if nothing else, it's out in the open, and I think that's actually quite healthy. But in terms of demonising the right, I mean, Berlusconi is not the kind of leader that we might choose here in Australia. But I think that in order to make sense of Italian politics, you also have to make sense of other factors, such as the politicisation of the magistrature, which is a serious problem in Italy, but no foreign correspondent or very few foreign correspondents actually take the time to explain that. And I think that's a key element.
Look, thank you all very much indeed for a very interesting discussion. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Guy Dinmore, Rome correspondent for the Financial Times, Anna Cento-Bull, Professor of Italian History and Politics at the University of Bath, and James Panichi, a producer with Radio National. Sylvia Greco's article, by the way, that I referred to throughout that conversation, and the cartoon associated with it, which was published in the Australian Financial Review, caused incredible outrage in the Italian community here in Australia. And we're told some local Italian newspapers are still campaigning on this very issue. Your thoughts, most welcome. I feel sure there are many of them, and I would love to hear from you. Just go to our website and you can see how you can leave your thoughts, and also how you can listen to individual stories, segmented audio we call it, if you want to catch up on Radio on Saturday Extra when you can't hear it live.